listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour number two of Miller and Moulton, one of those days in which the producer and the sports talk show host, they bounce out of bed when the alarm clock goes off. They run to the microphone. Can't wait to do today's show. Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com. Bud Elliott's going to join us in 35 minutes to talk about the impending merger between the Big Ten and the SEC. I mean, why not after yesterday?
What's off the table is what you're telling us.
There's not much that now that can't happen. I mean, seriously, what will shock you now? Although I got to tell you, Republicans and Democrats coming together on anything of substance, that would shock me.
That would shock me as well, David.
Right. And it would shock them too. All right. But seriously, I mean, you might as well start talking about the Big Ten SEC merger. Greg Sankey is Jay Monahan. And Nick Saban going, I didn't know anything about this. Yeah, it's a lot of money, Nick.
You know, I will say the Big Ten did as good of a job with their announcement of USC and UCLA. They kept that under wraps.
They didn't even tell their own commissioner. He was vacationing in Europe. He's like, wait, what?
You know, and I think Paul is closer. He says it'd be more like an SEC-ACC merger. And actually, what it would be more like is an SEC-Sunbelt merger with where the Live Tour was.
Right. Sunbelt Conference USA, something like
right.
that.
Right. The AAC.
Right. So many unanswered questions. I guess we'll get more answers today and tomorrow and really throughout the year. I mean, they got a lot of details they got to work out. I mean, this is a piece of paper, Mark, that says, okay, we're going to merge. Sign here. Well, what are the details? We've got to work it out.
Well, yesterday and today was the day when it was announced the NFL-AFL merger. It didn't happen for a few years after that, but it was announced. They're going to get this done in reasonably short time. I mean, they have to have all their ducks in a row here, I would imagine, in the next 3-4 months. And they've got nothing other than an agreement in principle. But Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, is a hypocrite. And there's no two ways about it. We all know it. I'll prove it to you right now. Here's Jay Monahan 1 year ago, the RBC Canadian Open, sitting next to Jim Nantz in the booth, talking about LIV Golf.
And I would ask, you know, any player that has left or any player that would ever consider leaving, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
Playing the 911 card.
Right. Uh-huh. Before that, he had talked about being close to two families of that lost family members in 9/11.
Yes. I will say, which is fascinating, the two people that Jay Monahan trusted, apparently his circle was two guys. One of them's a business guy. The other guy, okay, lost family members on September 11th. And yet was instrumental in brokering this deal. Mark Lai coming up in less than an hour, by the way. Hoping to do two segments with Mark Lai.
You know, what if, David, they want Monahan to resign, which they do as PGA Tour commissioner, but the new for-profit group hires him as their CEO?
And he could be their representative on the PGA Tour board?
Right.
I honestly don't know how he survives this. If I'm a PGA Tour player, to save face, first off, I'm so angry at him if I bought in to the crap that he was selling for the last year and a half. I mean, to realize how quickly this all went down, the very first LIV event was a year ago at this time. It was the first weekend of June in London. You know, this hasn't been 3 years. Hasn't been 2 years. You know, Phil's quotes came out 18 months ago. I mean, had anybody really taken this whole thing seriously before Phil's quotes? I mean, it was the beginning of 2021, or excuse me, 2022, when Phil's quotes were put out there, which also, he was right about that too. There are a bunch of scary blankety blanks. Yes. Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're using money to buy their way into the mainstream world. And this just in, it's working all over the world. It's working. I mean, Mark, I will say this. It's not like there's a European soccer fan that could say anything.
Oh, no.
I mean, they're buying teams, for goodness sakes. So, you know, if you haven't abandoned the, you know, European soccer, you can't abandon golf. And that's really where we want to get to.
If you're an F1 fan?
Yeah.
They're super involved in F1.
By the way, they're allowed to invest in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball also. They're allowed to invest. Now, I don't believe they have any money invested in Major League Baseball or the NHL. But the NFL and the NBA have both said, yeah, we'll take their money. Don't know how they're going to – I mean, I could see them getting involved in the NBA before the NFL, but –
But I'd like to hear from our listeners today. 21,000 is the text line. You can join us, twitch.tv/MillerandMolton, and join us right in the Twitch chat room. Same with YouTube and Facebook, for that matter, where we broadcast every show. Are you going to watch less golf?
Brian in our Twitch chat room said golf really blew it yesterday. It sounds like, so did they lose you, Brian? Are you done? Are you Mark's mom? I'm done with golf. I'm not watching it anymore. I'm done. You know, then Deadstruck just in our Twitch chat room. I'm going to watch more now.
And there's a lot of you that didn't watch before, won't watch now. I get it. It's golf. But we haven't had a merger in what?
ABA, NBA was mid-70s. NHL, WHA was late 70s. It's been almost 45 years since we've had a major merger in this country in sports.
And how will this change golf? We will see. Does LIV Golf go away? Are they still going to have events? How does the team concept enter its way into the PGA Tour down the road?
Well, it is... If you're into this at all, and this is a little nooks and crannies here, man, the LIV golfers are all in on the team thing. They genuinely really like it. They find it fun. I mean, it is easy money if you play well that week. I mean, you know, they split up $3 million amongst four guys. I mean, you know, it's pretty good. But, I mean, they like it. Brendan Steele just left the PGA Tour late last year to go jump on LIV. He's part of Phil's team on the LIV Tour. He's played 7 events. That's it. He's only played 7 events on the LIV Tour. He was asked yesterday, and I'll give PGA Tour Radio credit. They booked him on the show. I was impressed because, trust me, it's not like they've said LIV in the last year and a half on PGA Tour Radio, and yesterday they were booking LIV players. And they asked Brendan Steele, Mark. They said, hey, you know, now eventually you're going to be back and you could play the PGA Tour and, you know, what have you missed? And he goes, honestly? And they're like, yeah. He's like, I'm really good friends with Keegan Bradley and I would have wanted to have played Zurich, the team event with him this year. Okay. That week I was a little bummed. I just wanted to play Zurich with Keegan. He goes, otherwise, everything about the LIV I like better. And he started going through it one at a time. And he said, I know everybody on the PGA Tour makes fun of the whole team thing. He goes, honestly, it's my favorite part of the tour. He said, it's like being in college again. The four of us and our caddies, we pal around together. We eat together. We hang out together. We go to movies together. He goes, I'm telling you, it's awesome. He says, most fun I've had playing professional golf. Oh, okay.
So for all you golf fans out there, of which there are a lot of, Tampa, St. Pete, Fort Myers, Naples, two of the biggest golf markets in the country. Are you watching more? Are you watching less? Are you done? Because so many of you were never going to watch LIV Golf and told us that every time we brought it up. And now the tour's emerged. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I don't know how you couldn't consider this a big win for LIV Golf yesterday. A huge win.
Now, is it going to be a win for professional golf? I mean, there's going to be a lot more money. A lot more money now involved in professional golf. All the events. And, Mark, I will say this. Here's where I think it's going to benefit the PGA Tour long term. The PGA Tour was basically an America thing. Played one event in Canada, played an event in Mexico. You know, they tried to play one or two events overseas, but the PGA Tour is basically an America thing. All right. When the LIV took their little act and they took it to Australia and they took it to Singapore and places like that, they got massive crowds. If I was at the PGA Tour, that would have got my attention. That would have been like, they're trying to do a world thing. There are a lot more people around the world than there are in the United States. Maybe we should get in on this whole world thing. A lot more golfers around the world than there are in the U.S. And I wonder if we'll find out if that had any impact at all also.
Can't wait for the schedules to be coming out and how they change things. And will LIV Golf even continue? Monahan didn't seem to think so yesterday in his comments, not in its current form. But he backed off of completely saying it would be done.
Because in the back of his mind, he's thinking, I got to get through this week first. I got to still have a job come Friday.
21,000 is the text line. How do you feel about the PGA Tour and LIV Golf merging? Your comments on the other side. Bud Elliott in 25 minutes right here on the Florida Sports Network.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes past the hour. Mark Lie for two segments coming up in 40 minutes' time. Bud Elliott in a little more than 15 minutes. We'll jam in some college football. We'll talk about life and the pursuit of happiness in a little over an hour with Seth Everett. 21,000 is how you can text the show. Guess many of you have an opinion on this LIV PGA Tour merger. Many chiming in our Twitch chat room, Mark. If I was a PGA Tour member, I would be livid. I would speak to my sponsors and boycott the next tournament. And then he said, and I would want to take out that commissioner. But I'm curious, Mark, do you think these guys would just get on a plane today and leave Toronto?
I don't think so, because it's not an elevated event. These are guys that are 125 to 150 right now on the FedEx list. They need the points. So I don't think there's going to be a mass exodus of players saying, we're going to show Jay Monahan, we're not going to show up at the Canadian Open.
But I mean, if you stand for something, you'd stand for something. And it hurts you. I mean, that you take a stand. It hurts you. That's part of taking a stand. I mean, to me, if you're a PGA Tour player, okay, if you don't say something, do something, then, you know, you're complicit.
And that's what I think we will have. Now, if I were Rory, I wouldn't show up for the presser and I wouldn't show up for the tournament.
If I were Rory, I would do the presser and announce I'm withdrawing.
Fine. And let Monahan and everybody have it for the hour that I'm up there on the podium, get on my private jet, and I'll see you at the U.S. Open next week.
Now, I'm trying to think if Rory, if one of his major sponsors is RBC, this could be a problem. Like, you know, I think DJ used to be sponsored by, or that's another thing, by the way, all these companies that ditched DJ and Mickelson, when they call back and they want to put, like when KPMG wants to put their letters on Phil's hat. I mean, if you're Phil, I mean, just don't you just have a text or a tweet ready that simply says, shove it up my, and you just keep sending it out to so many people?
I really would take a bullet for you, David.
Oh,
I really would.
If I was Phil Mickelson, I would be insufferable. And people are going, well, Phil is insufferable. I'd be Mickelson on steroids.
There is no doubt. Here are the texts that I'm getting. I'll watch more golf for now to see how golf is affected. The game of golf and the fans are the winners. Jay Monahan is the loser. Nothing changes. I'll check in on the majors or if Tiger is the hunt, which probably won't happen again. I'll watch the same amount of golf that I do now, mostly big events and majors.
Twitch chat room, Hops. I'd have two conditions to move forward with the merger. Both the name PGA Tour and Monahan have to be gone permanently. We have had a few people say, do you have to rebrand the tour now and make it something other than the PGA Tour? Johnny Yo, by the way, in our Twitch chat room, I am finished with the Royal Saudi Blood Money PGA Sellout Tour. The PGA app has been removed from my phone. Enough said. Many of you are forgetting 19 of the 22 who killed everyone with airplanes were Saudis. No, actually, Johnny, I don't think we've forgotten at all. You were alive on September 11, 2001, I don't think there's a lot you've forgotten.
I do think that the marketing aspect of it is the biggest question for me. I mean, what changes? Because I don't think anything really changes from a golf standpoint, but certainly from a marketing standpoint, since there's a lot more money being pumped into that. But is it enough to grasp more people's attention?
Especially if more good players play, it grabs more people's attention.
Well, not only that, but Liv's motto was golf but louder. And I feel like Liv was trying to target a younger audience.
Oh, well, there's no doubt they were. Yeah. There's no doubt. The shorts, the you know, everybody teeing off at the same time, the music. I mean, it was something. I mean, you know, Mark and I share a friend, a former sportscaster in Southwest Florida named Jay Severson. And Jay golfs, you know, I mean, I'm going to date myself here, but when I first saw Jay on a golf course, he golfs with a boombox. Okay. I mean, Jay does not play golf without his music. Loud. And that was the LIV. I mean, you walked around during one of their tournaments. I went to one. I worked two remotely, and I worked one on site. It was something to be walking around and hear rock music blaring, okay, while Kepka's hitting a 6-iron in a 15.
Now, I'm not saying there's going to be music festivals now on PGA Tour events, but, you know, there's certainly other aspects that they can implement that actually could help them.
Well, if you think about it, it was, you know, the 16th at Phoenix is a rock show, mm-hmm. and they just tried to do that at Colonial to try – not at Colonial, was it – they did that at par three of one of the last tournaments, the one before the PGA, where they tried to make that par three like 16 at Phoenix, trying to add something to it. So I think the sport has to market itself younger, period. And I think the PGA Tour was taking some of that early from Liv. But I'm more interested with what they do with Liv Golf, what happens to it, how they bring the players back, and the fallout from bringing the players back.
Okay, Music wonders in our Twitch chat room, how many people didn't watch the majors this year because the LIV guys were in it? Well, A, Masters ratings were good. PGA ratings were bad. Form whatever conclusions you want. Many people have noticed that Jack Nicklaus said that yesterday was a good day for golf. He said, you know, I want to see the details, but if it makes golf better, I'm all for it. So the question now is Jack a sellout?
$21,000. That's the text line. 21000. If you've never texted the show before, you need to simply text the keyword FSN Radio. All one word, FSN Radio. Love to hear your thoughts on the merger between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour that happened yesterday, little after 10 in the morning. Time now for our Clutch Vodka play of the day. Clutch with a K. Felipe, what do you have for us?
To Major League Baseball we go. The Reds down 5 against the Dodgers at home. I think they're exceeding expectations this year, because they came back, scored 3 in the 9th, and beat them.
Fly ball, left center field. This will get the job done. Hayward giving chase. It won't matter. It drops anyway. And here comes Stuart Fairchild to score the winning run. Matt McClain and the Reds walk it off, overcoming an 8-3 Dodger lead to beat the Dodgers 9-8 with 3 in the 9th.
So it's a crazy scene in Cincinnati, and you hear that call, and it's like, oh, that has to be the Dodgers radio guy, right? 700 WLW Cincinnati. What was that? I mean, that disappointed me, because it was an amazing game. The Reds won in dramatic fashion against one of the most stacked teams in Major League Baseball, and that's all the energy you have for me?
Well, maybe he was spent, because it was a big night in Cincinnati. Apparently, they called up their top prospect, who's the top prospect in all of baseball. And he made his debut last night. So,
yeah, that's not a very good sell.
No, no.
There was nothing clutch about it. It was a clutch game.
He wanted a walk-off. He scored 3 in the 9th, and they beat the Dodgers. Where are you going to go?
I mean, they're more fired up broadcasting golf, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. I mean, clutch.
Clutch with a K, there's no doubt. The Reds with the walk-off win over the Dodgers. And that is our Clutch Vodka play of the day.
All right. We're going to change subjects for a segment. I have to admit, we booked Bud Elliott before the whole merger went down. But Bud's got this blue chip index, and it tells you that only these teams are capable of winning the national championship. We'll reveal it and him next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
22 minutes before the hour, Mark Lai will join us for two segments, beginning at the top of the hour to talk about this PGA Tour LIV merger thing that they concocted yesterday. Seth Everett 1 hour from now, but we had people clamoring for our next guest. It's like, hey, with everything going on in college football, when are you going to talk to Bud Elliott again? So we reached out to Bud Elliott, you know, 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports, a couple of great podcasts, including the podcast of the year, Nolcast, last year. Thank you very much. Also, the Cover 3 podcast. Follow Bud on Twitter, Bud Elliott 3. That's Elliott with 2 L's, 2 T's, the number 3. Bud, how you been?
Guys, I've been good. Been busy. We've been doing summer school on Cover 3. Been down there. Went to the FAU-FSU mega camp that they had down there in Boca, and it was a good time. So, been busy. Blue chip ratio out yesterday, so a lot of things going on. I got to go out to Vegas in a couple weeks after Elite 11 to pick up my winnings from the Caesars contest and the Golden Nugget contest. So pretty excited about that. It's a busy summer. Like, there's no off season.
Picking up checks. That's what we like to hear. And for the record, he gave a lot of those picks away for free on this show over the course of the last couple of years. And he has been on fire, to say the very least. In regards to recruiting, how big is this summer? I've seen, you know, these visits to Florida. You just talked about that camp. It seems that there is a lot going on in the recruiting world right now.
There is. So Florida is in a really interesting situation, right? I think Billy Napier is a good recruiter, and I think he, for the most part, has a good recruiting staff. They beefed up the staff quite a bit in the transition from Mullen to Napier. Now, last year they finished with a losing record, right? And this year their Vegas win total is 5.5. I kind of think over on that is the right way to go. I have a hard time seeing Florida actually miss a bowl. I do think Napier generally knows what he is doing. They had a bunch of really elite kids on campus last weekend. They're going to have more on campus coming up over the next few weeks. Now, they did not get commits out of that quite yet. What you're hearing is like, Florida made a good impression. I'm going to be watching to see what Florida does this year. I know Swamp 247, our Florida site, does a tremendous job, right, with Blake and Jacob over there. Like, they really are, they're kind of the nuts in this industry, right? Like, they know what they're talking about. I think it's a little bit concerning that they did not get commits out of that, especially because they had DJ Lagway, their elite quarterback prospect, you know, helping to recruit all these kids too. But they are aiming high. Like, Florida is trying to get kids that are going to go to Georgia potentially, or Clemson, or Alabama. So I think with the Gators, it's make the good impression now and have the season that you need to have in the fall to give those kids a reason to say yes. We actually saw this last year with FSU.
Well, that's right. We were going to ask you, okay, is the Norvell comparison. Remember, he goes 3-6, 5-7. You know, Napier's recruiting off of 6-7, and the year before he got there was 6-7. So the situations are similar. Is the Norvell comparison a fair one in which we're not going to see on and off field results for Florida really until a year from now and on the field in 24?
I think it actually is pretty fair. Now, you have to somehow tease out the COVID year, right? Because like the first year was basically a complete wash, and Florida plays a more difficult schedule than FSU most seasons. I think this year, certainly given the fact they play Utah and the Noles in the non-conference. But yeah, if they can show some progress, I talked to Jacob Rudner of Swamp 24/7 on Cover 3. I asked him, like, what record do they need to have to get land the kind of recruiting class that's going to allow Billy Napier to have the success that allows him to be successful long-term there at Florida, which means like you don't lose to Georgia every year, right? Like you're consistently with FSU, you're challenging Bama, like Florida has done for most of our lives, right? Like they've been a pretty good program since the 80s, obviously, and have more titles than most teams out there. And Jacob said, I think they need to find a way to win 8 games, right? If they're going to sign these kids that are considering Clemson, that are considering Georgia, that are considering Bama, you need to find a way to like kind of be in and out of the top 25 poll. Find a way to win 8 ball games. Obviously, like, that's higher than their win total, but I don't think it's necessarily completely out of the realm of possibility.
Are they shooting too high? Is it troubling when you're going after those? Because, you know, everybody wants those players. If you don't get them, is there a fallback for them? Or is this the only way you can approach it if you're Florida?
I would be shooting high at this point, honestly. It's still Florida. You can drop down and get guys later on if you want to. You saw that some last cycle. They did have some good plan Bs lined up. They're officially visiting and having a lot of kids visit. So it's not like they're just focusing on the top of the top. And you also have the transfer portal now, right? Like there used to be a larger penalty if you kind of overshot a little bit in the high school recruiting and maybe your plan Bs were already really solidly committed elsewhere. So you had to drop down to plan Cs. Now your plan B may just be hit the portal, sell some playing time, right?
Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports, Cover 3 Podcast, Nolcast. Follow him on Twitter, Bud Elliott 3, Elliott 2 L's, 2 T's, and the number 3. Listen, before we get to your blue chip ratio, just your thoughts on the SEC punting on going to the 9-game schedule. And is that significant for you next year when we go to the 12-team playoff and they're playing a, quote, inferior schedule? Would that make a difference, or have they just, by winning 13 of the last 17 national championships, quite frankly, they can make their own rules?
In my modeling, I basically give them a half-loss pass, right, based on the committee's behavior. I think the committee thinks SEC is far and away tougher than any other league, really, as far as excusing a loss in the loss column. I think there's a lot of competing factors here, right? I think Sankey probably really thought they would get the votes to go to 9. Next year, I'm sure they will get the votes to go to 9 because you'll have Texas and Oklahoma come in. I think they'll obviously vote for it. And then, you know, like it could be 9-7, assuming the vote this year was, you know, was a 7-7 or less, right? Because you need a majority vote to get this thing. Maybe they really are concerned about the committee caring about strength of schedule. Right? and maybe they're going to press for some kind of RPI or whatever, like we see in basketball, because I really don't think the committee cares about strength of schedule all that much. Like they pay lip service to it, but for the most part, they just rank order these things based on the number of losses with small adjustments for strength of schedule. That's the history of the committee so far. So maybe that if they really are able to force change as far as strength of schedule, which I want, because that means we're going to have better matchups across the country. If they really care about strength of schedule, if they're really willing to excuse losses as long as you play well, then teams will be a little bit less scared to play these big time matchups. Right now, it is not smart scheduling from a playoff berth standpoint to play these big games. Now, from a keeping your season ticket holders happy standpoint, yes, obviously, like a lot of season ticket holders don't want to, you know, see you play three tomato cans and then a conference schedule in the ticket package that they have to buy. But maybe it'll get to that. And also, I think it was Ross Dellinger or Thamel or maybe Brandon Marcello who said he thinks that the bowl eligibility 6-6 requirement will be going away, and it'll just go to like which teams are actually want to play bowl games, right? And okay, like you go play it, which I'm for too, because I'm tired of seeing these bowl games where you have half the team opt out. Like, I'd rather just see teams that are excited to play and are going to play most of their full rosters.
Or maybe we could just get rid of a few of these bowl games, but we know that will never happen because ESPN's pumped them up. Mm-hmm. So, all right, just very simply, what is the blue chip ratio? So people understand what it is we're talking about. Give us a quick once over of what your blue chip ratio is.
Sure thing. So blue chip ratio is the measure of have you recruited well enough to win a national title. Not developed well enough, not retained well enough, not coached well enough, not cultured well enough. Simply, have you recruited well enough to win a national title? And over the last decade plus, you need to sign more 4- and 5-star prospects than 2- and 3-star prospects over the previous four classes. So it's not something that's trying to say that these are the teams that are most likely to win it. It's just give me the entire set of teams that have established a talent base on the recruiting side that is good enough as recruits to win a national title. And from there, we can kind of pare it down if we want to. But like that's essentially it. It's who has recruited well enough over the last 4 years to actually take home the prize.
There are 16 teams that have over 50% of their roster be 4- and 5-star recruits. 16, which I think is a couple more than normal. Like Auburn made it at 51%. USC made it at 52%. What's interesting to me here is, one, Florida State ain't on the list. And Florida State's in everybody's top 10 and some people's top fives. And the Canes and the Gators are both on the list. Miami with 61% of their roster and Florida with 64%. If I'm a Gator fan, I'm going, seriously? We got that many guys, 4- and 5-stars? No, have you watched us the last couple of years?
Exactly right. So, look, the last year, Willie Taggart and Mike Norvell's first two recruiting classes are all rolled into this. Last year, the class that just signed 5 months ago is the first time that Mike Norvell's staff showed a pulse on the recruiting trail. So, yes, they have a lot of good players on that team. Do they have a lot of great players? I'll hit you with this stat, and this is something that is, I think, more retrospective. The last four national champions have averaged 7 first-round picks within the next 2 drafts. That's pretty nuts. Although LSU is the lowest at 5, they had 5 in the top 15, which is obviously like elite, elite players. How many first-rounders do you think FSU has on their team right now for the next 2 drafts? Maybe one?
Maybe the quarterback.
No, hell no. No. Like Jordan Travis is a good college quarterback. He's not going to be a first-round pick. I think he's more of like a, you know, fifth-round type guy. I think it's Jared Verse, the defensive end. You know, so I think that Florida State this year has a lot of really good players. I don't think they have a lot of like seriously, you know, top 50, top 30 type picks on their roster. But they're an interesting test case for sure. Like, they are definitely the team that I'm most worried about breaking this.
And obviously TCU was not on the list last year, and look at where they made it. And Mark, in comparison, if you're picking the Noles over Clemson, Clemson with the 5th highest blue chip rating at 72%.
Well, that's, you know, when you got Clemson there, but you also have Florida State, who's done really well in the portal. How do you measure the portal? Because this is recruiting. This is not portal. This is not transfer. This is about the guys you bring in. How have you at all adjusted, or will you at one point adjust because of the portal, bud?
So I actually do put the portal guys in here in the later part of the article. I show the adjustments, right? So for the most part, and this is consistent with what we are seeing in the NFL draft too, right? Most of your first rounders, most of your second rounders, most of your real difference makers in the sport are not coming from the portal. Almost all of your guys at premium positions are not coming from the portal, but I do put them in. So here's the deal. Most teams dropped about 2 or 3% when all their portal guys were added in because most of the portal use is for depth. Florida State actually went from 38% to 41% when their portal stuff was included. The thing is, what's dragging FSU down is really bad recruiting for three of the last 4 years. And last year was barely over the blue chip mark. So like that's their first year that they've even had, you know, somewhat championship caliber recruiting. You have to stack classes on top of classes. So they have like the portal is providing a good number of quality players and a couple elite players so far. USC is obviously the example with Caleb Williams, but we have seen in the past, like even grad transfer quarterbacks oftentimes were the difference. However, certain positions you just cannot find out of the portal. 15 of 16 offensive tackles drafted in the NFL draft were not portal kids, right? Almost all of your edge rushers, not players in the portal. So certain spots, especially the really elite positions, you kind of have to get out of high school. And that's why I think, within my list, Michigan went up 54 to 55%. I think they've done a really strategic job with the portal, but most teams will drop down a percentage or two.
Got about 30 seconds left. Do you anticipate before the start of the season, and by the way, 80 days away from week zero today, do you anticipate conference
realignment? I do not. You guys skipped there for a half second. You still got me?
Yeah, we're there. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Okay. Did it to everybody.
I don't think we're going to see any more conference realignment before the start of the season. I don't. I think if you're Colorado, you have to do your due diligence, which is getting the Pac-12 number and getting the Big 12 number. And then I think maybe next offseason we'll figure that out. But I don't think we're going to get it. But I could be wrong on that. I really am not super plugged there.
Just one ask for me, bud, is by the time we have you on next, I need some of that Kentucky Owl bottle that's over your shoulder. Drink. That bottle is completely full. We need you to crack that bourbon bottle by your next appearance.
I got a bunch of those, actually. The store by me had a good price on that. So I went and scooped it.
So translation, the bottle may be full, but it's my seventh bottle.
Yep. Yeah, about right.
Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports, the Cover 3 and Nolcast podcasts, also on CBS. Follow him on Twitter, Bud Elliott, 2 L's, 2 T's, and the number 3, Bud Elliott 3. Bud, safe travels to Vegas. Collect those winnings, and we'll talk again before the start of the season.
See you guys.
Bud Elliott, kind enough to join us, and he is also basking in the glow of the first-place Rays.
Miller and Moore.
College football winnings and the first-place Rays. He's a happy guy.
Mark Lye to talk LIV PGA merger next.